Hello and welcome to the Donor Egg Mama podcast for soul-led intended parents considering a donor egg pathway and parents of donor egg conceived children. I'm your host, Adele O'Connor, a qualified fertility coach and proud donor egg mama. I'm just a normal mum that went on an extraordinary journey to conceive. I hope this podcast helps you in some way to break free from emotional overwhelm, face your fears, and find the courage to move forward and bring that baby that's on your heart into your reality. Let's talk openly about our emotions and all topics donor egg IVF. Thanks for listening. Hello, and welcome back to Donor Egg Mama podcast and episode 9. I'm your host, Adele O'Connor, IVF warrior and proud donor egg mama. Today I have the lovely Antonia Wright of Family Focused Nutrition back for a chat about how to support your body best during three really intense times during the donor egg pathway: the embryo transfer, the 2-week wait, and early pregnancy. In this episode, Antonia also answers specific questions from the participants in my January donor egg IVF support group, which I have to say, thank you ladies, they're really great questions, and I'm sure you, my beautiful listener, may have pondered these same questions, so I hope you gain some value and knowledge from this episode. As always, if you'd like to find out more about Antonia and her company, Family Focused Nutrition, all of the information about her is in the show notes. So I best hand over to Antonia now and allow her to introduce herself. Antonia, welcome.
Yeah, well, thank you for inviting me along. Now, we've done like a few podcasts previously, so it's great to do this together as well.
Absolutely.
Yes, so I am a dietitian, and I've been a dietitian for coming up nearly 20 years, which makes me feel really old. And I started my private practice in family-focused nutrition about 2 years ago now. And the focus on that is basically fertility, going into pregnancy and postnatal. I do have another job where I kind of do pediatric nutrition. So I work in the hospital, and I will be bringing that into my own private practice quite soon. So watch out for that. But yes, I have a virtual clinic. So I have clients from around the world, basically, which is really great. And we talk from everything about, you know, fertility, infertility, sperm health, egg quality, freezing eggs, all the way through to pregnancy and then postnatal as well, like how do you get your energy back, and questions around
five and a half years later, how
trying to develop like a secret supplement for that, but yeah. So it's a vast area, it's great, really enjoy it.
Amazing. So as you know, Antonia, I've told you about my very special group of ladies that I'm working with at the moment, who are all on a donor egg pathway. So I guess the sort of point of interest from women that are on a donor egg pathway would be how to prepare best, you know, their uterine lining, just for embryo transfer in general. And then during that 2-week wait, what can they do? What do they need to avoid? What foods and supplements can help to boost their womb health? Then, you know, God willing, going into early pregnancy, how to support, you know, what you can do to support pregnancy. Like, I don't know if there's any foods that boost, you know, progesterone levels and that kind of thing. So that would definitely be points of interest for ladies on a donor egg pathway. And I also have some specific questions. Maybe we'll start with the specific questions.
Yeah, because and the topics that you mentioned, they can be really big. I mean, you know, as big as there's lots of dietary information out there, which is correct. And, you know, do you just need to kind of a general Mediterranean diet, or do you specifically look at different sort of nuts and seeds? So it can be quite encompassing for a lot of people. And I just wanted just to highlight, just if you are one of those people who are on Instagram or on social media and you're trying to look at your nutrition and you're getting all confused about different things, just take a real step back, because you've got to remember that the evidence that's coming out now around nutrition, fertility and different things, it's still relatively new evidence. So it's only been around maybe for the last 15 years. It's not, you know, we know about nutrition, cardiac disease, nutrition, diabetes, but in regards to fertility, it's still quite new. So studies are still quite small. So don't get bogged down in it. Just really take a step back and kind of make sure your diet is healthy and eating a variety of food. That's really basic. But obviously, I'll try and help navigate sort of through this as much as I can.
Yeah, that's such a great point. Like, we don't think about that, that it's still very new information, and that, yeah, there's not been perhaps clinical trials or tests done on nutrition with, yeah, from a fertility point of view.
Yeah, and just, always, I mean, this is with any health professional, make sure that who you're following or getting advice from is either, ideally a dietitian, because we are held, especially in Australia and New Zealand, our regulation is quite tight. Like we will get in a lot of trouble if we are saying something that's not true or hasn't been proven in any research. So what we say is usually, scientific. So follow someone who ideally is a dietitian, or if they are a nutritionist, but they've just done a lot of background study, and you can really tell that they kind of know what they're doing. So, yeah, don't get lost in kind of all these nutritionists out there, because they will pick up ideas and concepts and run with it, but not really understand the basis of it.
No, I love that. Thank you, Antonia. So one of the questions that came through was regarding early pregnancy and talking about drinking coffee. So is it okay during early pregnancy or throughout the whole pregnancy to drink coffee, or am I better off switching to decaf, or is that worse? Yeah, so start off with that. That's a
That's a
nice
great question, and we get it
one.
a lot. And I mean, gosh, if I was to give up my coffee, I have had a couple of children, but yeah. So you're quite right that the evidence is a bit on either side around whether you should be drinking coffee or not. What we know is that at least 200 milligrams of coffee is generally safe for pregnancy, and we'll probably recommend that for the fertility journey as well. So trying to get pregnant. So 200 milligram is probably a good, probably a large flat white or a latte that you can buy, or it's probably about two kind of home instant coffees. So still quite enough if you kind of don't drink coffee 8 times a day. So what I'd always recommend, though, if you do like your coffees, is just to have one with the caffeine in it, so have a decent one, and then the rest have decaf. Decaf is absolutely fine. There hasn't been anything wrong with decaf. It's got still caffeine, but it's really small. It's probably in about 18 milligrams per cup. So yeah, have a caffeine one if you need it first thing in the morning, and then drink decaf after that.
Amazing. That's
Also,
great.
actually, just a side note, when we talk about coffee as well, we tend to talk about caffeine. So have a look at any other drinks that you're having. There's some fermented drinks might have caffeine in them. Some herbal teas might have caffeine. Energy drink. Yeah, have a
Yeah,
look at those,
Coke.
because I'll Yes, Coke, that was
Yeah.
the one. I forget Coke. So have a look at all those too, because they have caffeine. So you ideally aim for 200 milligrams and just check what the label is, what it has.
That's such good advice. So 200 milligrams is, and you said like a large coffee. I'm not a major, I don't know what we call it, caffeinista. Is that like large one? Is that two shots or is that one
Yes, two
shot?
shots.
Two
Sorry.
shots. Okay. So one, you could have two small.
You could.
Yeah. Okay. Great. All right. That's brilliant. Wish I'd known.
Yeah, so.
That's great for everyone out there who loves their coffee.
I do want to add to that, though. I know we'll probably talk about later, but I know we'll talk about the 2 week wait. I would advise in that 2 week wait, to be honest, I would advise to just go with decaf, because I think we're trying to be extra cautious and extra, sort of sensitive to what we're putting in our body during that time. So for that 2 weeks, I would probably just go decaf.
And once the pregnancy is established, so as soon as you get your beta result, all good.
Fine.
And I guess, look, if you're worried about it, then just have decaf. If it's something that,
Must do.
yeah, if you can go without and and that doesn't bother you, it's not a big thing, then have decaf. Then when, perhaps, yeah, when you feel comfortable, know that you can have a coffee once you're, because I know that women, obviously any woman that, in early pregnancy is nervous, but especially women on a direct pathway that have climbed mountains through IVF, and then, the stakes are so high, finally getting their pregnancy using donor eggs, that they're probably, so anxious about doing anything that might cause their bodies or that, affect their pregnancy in any way. So, if it's going to make you anxious, don't do it. If it's going to make you feel good, do it. You know, it's but scientifically, you're okay with 200 grams.
Yeah.
All right. And from coffee to fish.
Excellent.
In regards to eating fish, is there any type of fish we can't eat during pregnancy? So this is during pregnancy. And yeah, let's deal with that one first of all.
Yeah, so that would be the advice that we'd give to pretty much anyone anyway, is that it's to avoid any fish which have a high mercury content. And that's usually the fish that we call predatory fish that eat other fish, or they live for a long time. So generally it'd be your shark, so flake. So just bear in mind that a lot of fish and chip shops actually, the fish is flake. So swordfish, marlin, orange roughy. So the idea is that A, they live a long time, so they just build up with mercury, but also they eat other fish, and other fish will have mercury in them, just not huge amount. So then they build up with mercury that way. So just avoid those fish during, and it's probably to be honest, any time, but during your fertility journey, but also once you get into the pregnancy as well.
That is such enlightening news, because I always thought it was just like raw fish, like sushi.
Well, that's something different, and that's kind of food that's kind of on the side. I'm thinking like listeria and food poisoning and those kind of foods to avoid, which I can talk about. But yeah, in terms of sort of mercury.
Mercury, yeah. I'd never would have thought about that. So that's really, yeah, it's a great, great tip to have. Yeah, so in terms of listeria and things like that, sushi, I remember, yeah, not eating sushi when I was pregnant, yep. And, you know, that was probably worse than me than not drinking.
Yeah. Yeah, I've got lots of friends who like their first meal after giving birth is sushi. But, yeah, so any type of raw fish, raw shellfish as well, prawns. Mm. So think about that around Christmas time. You should be avoiding as well.
And oysters.
Oysters, yep.
Yeah, avoid. Okay. All right. That's good to know. And supplements. Do we need to switch supplements after a positive pregnancy test? So I guess talking about the prenatal supplements, like, you know, Elevate or whatever you take.
And this is a big topic, and I talk a lot about supplements in my consults. So I'm going to talk very general, because everyone's very different about what they need with supplements. And on a side note, I actually have like a supplement consult that I offer, which is just a half an hour consult, just purely looking at your diet and recommending what supplements you shouldn't be on for preconception. But in general, you should still be taking, once you're pregnant, you should still be taking folate, so at least 400 micrograms until end of trimester one. You can take it the whole time. There's no harm in it, but at least until trimester one.
Yeah.
Ideally a month before you conceive, but even perfect would be like 3 months or as soon as you want to start trying. But guidelines say 1 month before you are planning to, well, you conceive, like half the time you don't know that, but and then yeah, until your first trimester. The second one is iodine or iodine. I don't know which way is the right way to say it. Well, say it in a Kiwi accent. That should also be about 150 micrograms. Now, iodine is very important for the baby's brain and its nervous system. So again, you should ideally be taking that a good month or so before you conceive or embryo transplant, up to the time that you finish breastfeeding.
Okay.
Now we do get it in iodized salt, but I would always recommend to take a supplement as well.
Okay, brilliant. I didn't know that. Now, so interesting that you should say, you know, about the folate, that, you know, you should be taking it a couple of months before. From the perspective of a woman on a donor egg pathway, these ladies have probably been taking it for like, you know, potentially 4 years. So,
yeah, I know. You know
the whole IVF journey. So isn't that... Yeah.
I totally get it. And it's a water-soluble vitamin, so you do tend to pee it out. So it's not dangerous, but that's why you also should be taking it every day, because you do need to replace it. And there are definitely women who, and this is why it's very individualized about supplements, because some women need a higher dose of folate, and they will tend to be, if you've got any, either you've had any experience with neurotube defects or family history of neurotube defects, got diabetes, you tend to be maybe a bit overweight, you've got malabsorption problems like celiac disease. So they'll be on a higher dose of folate, and often that will need to be stopped as soon as you've had your transplant. and reduce down to the normal dose. So again, that's kind of to bear in mind for those women. If you are also taking anything else, if you are taking, and hopefully you've been prescribed these by a dietitian or a your specialist, but CoQ10 or NAC, or you're taking high doses of vitamin E or A, or anything out of the norm, then I would also recommend that you stop those, or definitely ask your fertility specialist if it's safe to continue on. And you should be stopping those potentially a couple of days before your transplant. And that's why I have my little kind of half an hour supplement, because everyone does tend to be taking quite different things. Also, what I try and look out for is in my consult is kind of tailoring your prenatal, because all the prenatal vitamins tend to be quite different as well. Because some of them have iron, some of them don't. Some of them have calcium, some of them don't. Some of them have choline, some of them don't. Omega-3, blah, blah. So I sort of help pick the ones in the market which generally tend to be more adequate for that particular person, because there's
That
so many out
sounds,
there.
I think that sounds so good, and so such a good idea to get that specialist advice for your unique situation. Because as women that have been trying to conceive for a long, long time, generally 4 years onwards, you've been possibly putting all sorts of things into your body, so it's good to just really get that very tailored, unique approach for you, for what's going to support this pregnancy in the best way. And obviously before that, the embryo transfer. Obviously you work on a global level. My clients come to me are all over the world. In terms of offering suggestions for supplements, how does that work when people are, over in the States or somewhere else, not
So
Australia?
I have developed, and I probably need to update it, but I have a kind of a multivitamin comparison chart for all, and hopefully they're all, but all like the multivitamins, prenatal or preconception multivitamins in some different countries. So I've got one for like US, Canada, Singapore, South Africa, UK, Australia, and New Zealand. So I've got those. So I've got a list of all the different multivitamins you have in your country, so I can compare. So it's not a
Oh,
problem.
amazing. That's so good. That's so good. Let me just look at some other questions we've been asked. Okay. What can we do to eat? What can we eat to support implantation? Is there anything besides sugar and alcohol that we need to be careful of while getting ready to implant?
Yes, good question. Okay, things to kind of avoid. And you it's definitely the top two would be excess sugar intake and excess saturated fat. And again, I just want to like kind of go backwards again, not to get too hooked up into all of this, because this is kind of general healthy eating as well. So so we've already talked about foods which contain mercury in them. Artificial sugars has a bit of evidence around it as well, not to have too much artificial sugar. So that will come down to like the fizzy drinks that you're having, and also potentially adding artificial sugar into any type of, coffees or things that you have. So I'd probably look at avoiding that. Alcohol.
Yeah.
One of the things is BPA. Have you heard of BPA before, Adele? So bisphenol A, which is a type of kind of a chemical that a lot of plastics has in it. So it's kind of been under scrutiny quite a bit, because BPA has been shown to somewhat leach into food products that it covers, which is a bit of a problem if, you've got something in a container that's sitting in the supermarket for like a year or in your cupboard. So buying plastics which are BPA free, or putting any of your dry goods or anything into glass containers, is a good one to do. So I'd look into that. I do talk around, just things like pesticides as well, making sure if you can buy organic, that's fine, or just making sure you wash all your ingredients. So that's kind of just practical knowledge as well.
With alcohol, just going back to alcohol.
Like alcohol and coffee.
Alcohol and coffee. So, obviously you're still preparing your body. You're not pregnant yet. You're about to have your embryo transfer. How much is too much? What's sensible? Should you just cut it out altogether? Or if you have the occasional glass here and there, is that okay?
I would say to cut it out. And I would actually say that pretty much majority, 95% of my clients would cut it out anyway.
So like for how long in the lead up to your embryo transfer?
A very good question. Alcohol is just such, it's just such a well-known chemical for the body. I'd probably avoid it at least a month before.
A month before, okay. Yeah. Just for general health, cut down inflammation, all those kind of things for your general womb health.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, that's good to know. And leading on to inflammation, I've got another question here. Okay, so reducing inflammation in the body, I've heard that nightshade plants like eggplant and tomatoes can cause inflammation. Is this something to avoid? Is this even true? And also, I used to hear using seed oils like sunflower oil and avocado oil was good to use. Now I'm hearing they can cause inflammation. Maybe I should stop there.
So nightshade plants tend to be, they're not talked about that often, to be honest, tend to be things like potatoes, capsicum, tomatoes, eggplant. Now, I haven't heard of it. I'll be honest, I haven't heard of it in the scope of fertility and inflammation at all. It just so happened I had seen a child, actually a baby, and the mum had taken it out of their diet because it's more kind of classed as a possible allergy. So some people have an allergy to these foods or intolerance, and therefore they have inflammation buildup.
Right.
So that's completely different to general population having inflammation from these foods. This is a particular child who has a reaction to this type of food. So I think it sounds like someone on social media is like, there's a chemical reaction. So let's pretend it's an inflammation for the whole body, for the whole population. So I would completely ignore that.
Okay. All right. So it's okay to add those.
Yeah. Unless you've got, allergic reaction, so you're getting hives and diarrhea or anything like that, maybe we should do an elimination on you. But otherwise, no.
No, okay, that's good to know.
What was the second bit?
Also, I used to hear using seed oils like sunflower oil and avocado oil was good to use. Now I'm hearing they cause inflammation. Do you have any thoughts on oils we should be cooking with in order to not be taking in bad oils or causing inflammation in the body?
Yeah, again, oils are a wee bit different depending on their composition. And we do look at oils because some have more saturated fat in them, which we don't want to have. Some have more polyunsaturated fat, which we do want to have. Some can change when you're heated to what we call trans fat, which are also kind of like saturated fats, are not good for you. So oils are quite different. For example, coconut oil, which, was like the bee's knees a while ago, is full of saturated fat. Like, it's ridiculous. I can't remember. It was like 60 or 70% saturated fat. So that was a complete, gimmick that it was actually good for you, because it's not. So in terms of fertility, though, we do tend to probably promote more that the extra virgin olive oil.
Yeah,
because it does tend to have more antioxidants in it, which is good because they help fight any kind of damage. You can also heat it to a higher temperature and it doesn't change the construction of it.
Okay,
so
good.
It tends to be the one that we tend to go with. It's also a good one to use because it's not that strong. Like avocado oil, I don't know if you've ever used it, but I mean, it's pretty good for your salad, but I wouldn't cook with it because it's actually quite strong. So extra virgin olive oil, and you can buy different varieties. So you can buy the light, which doesn't mean light in calories, it just means light in flavor. So that's probably a good one to use, or there's more robust ones that if you want a stronger flavor, you want to add to your salads or something. But on a side note, I listened to a really good podcast about this last year, end of last year. So it's probably around between July to December, from a really good dietitian who's really well known here in Australia with fertility and endometriosis, called The Fertility Friendly Food. That's your podcast name, Fertility Friendly Food. And it was, if you just kind of Google, it was around about oils, the best oil to use for fertility. And she goes through a whole lot of different ones. And I can send you the link for that,
Adele.
She goes through the whole lot, all the different oils, and kind of navigates through them. So I'd really encourage you to listen to her. And actually, her whole podcast is really good. So I'd encourage you to listen to that anyway.
That's excellent. We always love a good podcast suggestion.
Yeah.
especially coming
But
from
on,
diet.
just on a side note, though, you can still use sesame seed and all that. I mean, you know, in your salads and your cooking, I mean, they add flavour, don't they? So
yeah, it's not bad for you, but you don't have to. Just a good extra virgin oil suffices. Because I totally was caught up in the whole coconut craze and coconut oil craze. And I was led to believe that it was the only one that you could cook at high temperature that didn't break down to...
It probably doesn't because it's already saturated fat, so it doesn't break down to make...
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe I'm using the wrong word, but...
But, you know, but that, oh, it's the thing, that's marketing. That's yeah. Yeah. I think it was only us dietitians and a few other people who were like, what?
Really?
I'm using coconut oil.
I was having tablespoons of it.
And it was really good for the ketogenic diet. That's when it came through because it's a really good fat and kind of was a one to kick in the ketones on the ketogenic diet. So that's when the craze kind of came through. But anyway.
Yep. But that's so brilliant. I hope that's really helped everyone that's listening back today. And so Antonia already provided us with loads of information, but is there anything you haven't covered that you wanted to cover?
Yeah, well, I just wanted to actually just going back to the... got some questions around pregnancy, and that can be a really confusing time, especially around what foods to avoid. And I know you have clients in different countries, so it's always best to see what the guidelines are in your country because it does differ. And so I wanted to point that lady, I mean, I'm obviously more than happy to help go through them because it gets confusing about even like New Zealand say that you can't have frozen berries. That was something that came out a couple of years ago. So all my Australian clients were like, are we allowed to have frozen berries? And over here you can. So even that difference between two countries is. So I wanted to just again highlight another Instagram social media person, dietitian, who really focuses on pregnancy and information. And she's a really good friend of mine. She's in Auckland, New Zealand. Ooh. And her title is Auckland Family Nutrition. Her name is Sarah Jay. And she's got really good little posts about foods to avoid and things for pregnancy and just really focuses on that. And it's really good around Christmas time because that tends to be a time that you've got the ham and the food that's left out for 4 hours on the bench and the cheeses and things like that. So you don't know what you should be eating. So just wanted to sort of plug her in. And then just maybe go through the two-week wait. Do you have time for that?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
That's a really... obviously a really tense time and it's probably the longest 2 weeks that any woman and partner have to kind of go through. And look, we don't have a particular diet for fertility or for, you know, going through the 2 week wait or this, but we just pull from what evidence is out there. And in general, we follow the Mediterranean diet because it just seems to tick a whole of the boxes for us as well. But I kind of talk up a few different points that I'll mention. So in that 2 week wait, what I say is eat the rainbow. So when it comes to fruit and veggies, eat a rainbow of different colours. A, because fruit and veggies have really good antioxidants. So again, we want to just protect the egg as much as we can. Here in Australia, aiming for two serves of fruit and five of vegetables is really worthwhile. The other one is to maybe increase, if you haven't already, your whole grains in your food. So having things like quinoa, oats, buckwheat, just general whole grain bread is also really good at reducing down any inflammation. And we want to make your womb, basically, it's, you know, it's your first nursery for your little baby. So you want to make it really nice and reduce any kind of inflammation around what's going on.
Yeah.
But caffeine, we talked about that.
Yeah.
Again, I'll just, to be honest, just avoid it. Stop, we've already talked about supplements. So stopping any that you're taking additional that you're not, to, or ask advice around it and take the recommended supplements, so the folic acid and the iodine. I would also just go back to the pregnancy, avoid any listeria. So assume that maybe you are pregnant and avoid any foods that could cause, you know, so again, deli meat, soft cheeses, raw foods, raw eggs, so if they're not cooked properly, prepackaged, you know, sandwiches. And the other one that study has kind of shown, which has been quite important for the, and we all know this anyway, but is to increase calcium level. So making sure you're having at least, I'd like three serves of dairy a day. Now a serve will be either 250 mils of milk or two slices of cheese, or around 200 grams of yogurt. If you can do that, if you don't like calcium, then looking at other ways, and again, seeing a fertility dietitian is probably the best way to make sure that you get enough calcium in your diet.
Yes.
And then, as you know, I don't even need to tell you, Adele, but it's all about de-stressing, you know, taking the time out, calling some good friends that you haven't spoken to for a while to get those endorphins going in your body, happy endorphins, going for the walks, you know, being with your partner, you know, all those kind of things as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I always tell my clients the best thing you can do after an embryo transfer is watch a really good comedy, you know, like laugh, just try and get those happy endorphins.
Yeah.
Going, distract yourself from, you know, the anxieties, and just get your body into that state of safety, where you're balancing out that fight or flight of all the nerves that you've potentially been feeling. Oh my gosh, Antonia, you've given us so much incredible information. It's been so fantastic having you answer these questions that have been posed. Absolutely wonderful. So you've been very generous telling us different podcasts and Instagram addresses that we can follow. But how about you? How do we find you?
I'm like the worst business person ever. Yes, please feel free to follow me. So my Instagram handle is family.focus.nutrition, and my Facebook is Family Focus Nutrition, and then my website is www.familyfocusnutrition.com. And how I work. So I have a couple services that I offer. I have what's called, you know, Let's Get Started, which is kind of a one-on-one consult. It's usually over an hour. And we go through a lot of information. So it's quite in depth. People don't realize it's quite in depth. And they always say to me, gosh, you ask me more than my fertility specialist, because I need to. So I need to know what your medical history is like, your fertility journey, your medications, your supplements, obviously your diet, you know, and everything else. So it's a good little intense session. And what you get out of that is you get an idea of what you need to sort of mention, that we never put anyone on particular diets. It's all about what you can add to your diet to enhance it. Tends to be the way that, you know, fertility dietitians work. So what can we add in there to really kind of boost up your or optimize your nutrition for whatever you're going through? So you get a guide, meal plans, recipes, anything through that. And I have got my kind of signature Nourish to Flourish program. That's a 12-week program, and that's really good. So that's a fortnightly session with me. We do Voxer, like yourself, and also you get recommendations for supplements, and often I can get them a bit of a discount for those. But that's really good for just going through the process and having accountability and working towards something. So that's kind of two really basic ideas. But I do like having discovery calls. So if you're unsure about if I can help you, or you don't really know what you need, or just it's free, hop on my website, book in the time, 15 minutes, let's have a chat, and to see if I'm the right fit for you, basically.
Yeah, that's so beautiful. I've known Antonia for, oh my gosh, like so many years. Antonia was one of my clients through massage before she had her beautiful children.
8 years ago, maybe?
Yeah. So, I've known Antonia for such a long time, and, she's just such a beautiful person. And now that she's offering her services online, it's so good to be looked after by somebody that's just a really good all-round person and very easy to get on with. So I highly recommend Antonia. And reach out for a chat, because it's going to be a win-win. Reach out for a chat with Antonia and find out some information for yourself. And if you feel like working with Antonia, then you'll get a really specific, specialized, tailored program for you and information for you to support you on your donor egg pathway from a nutritional point of view. So if anybody has any other questions, feel free to drop them to me. I'm sure Antonia will be happy to answer a few extra questions that might pop up from this discussion. And otherwise, I will say thank you so much, Antonia, and look forward to talking again soon.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
So just before I go, I want to let you know I've got two fantastic offerings that are coming up soon.
Myself and Antonia are running a 2-hour workshop on supporting yourself emotionally with nutrition and mind-body connection. This is going to be on the 4th of April, 11:30. It's that Sydney time for our friends in the US. That will be early evening for you. And it will be the day before. This will be jam-packed with interactive exercises and resources to help you meal plan and work through fears and stress that are impacting your food intake, especially during these really intense times on your journey. So what will you walk away with? You'll walk away with a meal plan and a personalized guided meditation MP3. If you want to know more, just check out the show notes and you'll find links to find out more all about the 2-hour workshop coming up on the 4th of April, Sydney time, 11:30. So for our friends in the US, that will actually be on the 3rd of April, which is a Monday, and it'll be early evening. What else? What else is happening? Okay, so also I've got my next group support program for those either considering or in the thick of a donor egg journey. That starts May the 8th and will run for 8 weeks, which takes you up to the 30th of June. So look, I've had people going through this already. I ran a group support in January and the feedback was absolutely fantastic. And the sort of relief that the people felt that were in this group support program, just to be connected with other people and not to feel so isolated and just to feel so understood, the relief was absolutely immense. So the aim of the program is to connect you with others across the globe. So literally all corners of our world, and you connect via Voxer, which is a free app on your phone. It's like a walkie-talkie app and it allows you to chat in real time, and anyone that's, you know, that hears the buzz and picks up your message in real time can listen and reply to you, or otherwise you just listen to the message when it's convenient for you and get back to the other person, and there's just a beautiful flow of conversation. I lead the group and offer reflection questions and coaching support. And after a few weeks, you really will feel that beautiful friendship and connections growing with others in the group. And not only do you get to share your feelings, reflections, fears, doubts, and worries in a safe, non-judgmental place where people get it. They're all going through the same thing, so they just totally get it. And on top of that, you get my guidance as someone that's walked the path. And I'm a trained Freedom Fertility Formula Specialist and therapeutic coach. So what else do you get with the 8-week program? We meet via Zoom every 2 weeks on a live call. This helps us to connect even more, and we get a chance to, you know, check in, see how everyone's going, and then dive deeper into a specific donor egg IVF topic. It might be talking about the loss of your own eggs and genetics and how to cope with that grief. It might be talking about donor egg profile selection and the overwhelm that people feel, or looking at other types of donors available out there. It might be looking at how you can support yourself with womb healing, strategies around embryo transfer, and how to balance fear and hope in the 2-week wait, and how and when to tell your child their conception story, which obviously is so, so important, and to feel comfortable about that. So more than anything, you will fast track your knowledge, you'll feel supported, and you'll get to meet some fabulous other people who are going through the same thing as you. To complement that, you'll also have a resource-packed online course to go with this journey and allow you to do some self-paced work throughout the 8 weeks and beyond. You'll have this course available to you without a limit. It will just be there for you to log into whenever you need it. And there's guided meditations you can listen to specific to the donor egg pathway, which will support your journey, and affirmations to really help if you're in that negative spiraling brain. Affirmations help to build and strengthen neural pathways. I will be holding you in a safe and confidential, loving space with the intention of helping you shift from fearful and overwhelmed to confident, supported, and empowered. I know some people get really stuck in shame and secrecy, and I'd also really love to help you to work through those feelings and, you know, if possible, shift to a place of self-pride and celebration to get to a place where you can embody the incredible human that you are and also pass on that amazing sense of pride and celebration to your future child. So to sign up for May the 8th, just for the links in the show notes or send me an email, adele@nurturemama.com.au, or drop me a DM at my Instagram at donoreggmama. I look forward to connecting with you soon. Dear listeners, if you enjoy this episode, you might want to join my free Facebook group called Donor Egg IVF Emotion Support. It's for attended parents considering a donor egg pathway. There are beautiful people there from all over the world, and I'd love to see you there too. If you're interested in connecting or finding out more about the online courses that I offer, all the links are in my show notes. Sending love, and bye for now.